reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 11, Text 1. Krishna and Prabhupada by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. The material manifestation's ultimate particle, which is indivisible and not formed into a body, is called the atom. It exists always as an invisible identity, even after the dissolution of all forms. The material body is but a combination of such atoms, but it is misunderstood by the common man. Purport. The atomic description of the Srimad Bhagavatam is almost the same as the modern science of atomism, and this is further described in the Paramanuvad of Kanada. In modern science also, the atom is accepted as the ultimate indivisible particle of which the universe is composed. Srimad Bhagavatam is the full text of all descriptions of knowledge, including the theory of atomism. The atom is the minute, subtle form of eternal time. Om Ajnanati Manandasya Ajnanjana Shalakaya Chakshum Ratamina Tasmai Shigurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manavistam Shakitam Yena Vatale Swamipa Karam Tarati Swakaranti Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shiva Sari Gaur Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, please forgive me because I only found out I've been sitting here 10 minutes ago. And this subject matter is not my cup of tea, meaning I really do not understand it that well. Therefore, I will really depend on Prabhupada's purports here, because at this moment, it's all a bit blurry. So I'll try and say something meaningful, something you can all take with you and meditate on. I am no expert in the subject matter. So this is a wonderful section, although sometimes very difficult for us to understand, but I think it is a very important section of the Srimad Bhagavatam because it is a very, very scientific explanation of time and the effect of time in this material universe. And of course the explanation of what is the atom and how do atoms manifest and how does an atom go from the smallest, tiniest unit, and how does time differentiate, how does time and space, which are two correlative terms, how do they measure, how do they combine with atoms, and what is the relationship? And how does the living entity fit into all of this? So we might think these are just details that we might not even be interested in, or it's not relevant for us, but it is good because people out there sometimes would like to know in terms of the creation of the universe or the way everything is structured, how does time function? So the purport explains that the atom is a minute, subtle form of eternal time. And later on we'll start hearing that the atoms themselves are the ultimate state of the manifest universe. And there's different types, you know, the atoms start multiplying, etc., from one space into the other. And by the influence of time, of course, there are different days, different months, different periods, different lengths or durations of life that occur in different spaces of time because of how these atoms are positioned and also because of how time acts on these atoms. So later on in later texts, we hear very, very mathematical and astronomical calculations of what a right down to the second, to the minutes, the calculations of this. And Srila Prabhupada explains everything from a true tree to a Veda to a Lava, Nimesha, Kshana, Lagu, Paksha, etc. So right down to the most minute calculation of time for us, which is, you know, seconds or nanoseconds, etc., right up to the hours, days, and months, there's calculations that have been given. Prabhupada, of course, focuses on centering our focus around what Lord Brahma had explained in the Brahma Samhita, that the sun is the eye of the Supreme, and it rotates in its particular orbit of time. And because each there's a particular orbit for every different type of luminary, sun or moon, therefore there might be different periods of duration of life, etc. For us here, our normal duration of life is 100 years due to our how time is acting in this universe. And in the higher planetary systems, in the planets of the devatas, etc., there are different years, different time acts differently in different planetary systems. So for example, 1 year of the demigods is equal to our 360 years. So it is still the same element time, and the planet of the demigods, of course, that is still within the material cosmos. So time also acts differently from the earthly planet, the middle planetary system, and also in the heavenly planets, etc. So this is a basic understanding how the atom is a very minute, subtle form of eternal time. However, due to the fixation of or the movement or the orbit of different luminaries, the time factor along with the atom, they take on different forms and shapes, and they produce different lengths of existence, different durations of life, etc. So moving on, I read something that was very, very interesting. So there's this verse that in the Brahma Samhita, Yash chakshush esha savicha sakala grahanam raja samasta suramurti ashesha teja yasya gaya pramati samprutakala chakra govindam adipurisham tamaham bhajami. Lord Brahma is explaining, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, the Supreme Personality of God, and under whose control even the sun, which is considered to be the eye of the Lord, rotates within the fixed orbit of eternal time. The sun is the king of all planetary systems and has unlimited potency in heat and light. So there's a specific, there's always a specific orbit, there's a specific time factor that is put into place for the proper functioning of the comings and goings of the universe, whether it's the maintenance, creation or annihilation. There are time factors that have been put in, and there are specific devatas who are acting within those time frames so that the universal order can be maintained. So at different times of the creation or maintenance, there's also different portions where there are partial destructions or dissolutions. For example, at the end of Brahma's day or night, at the end of the life of each Manu, there are different types of dissolutions. So at different times in different sections of the yugas, or at the set of the four yugas, there's different types of dissolutions that occur. So everything actually is timed. Everything has a particular orbit or structure that it has to follow. It is not all random, right? It's just not just that one day the sun just dies, as sometimes we're told, or as some movies are being put out there. I don't know, when you guys were young, I'm sure you didn't watch movies like that. There are certain depictions of how the world is going to end when the sun dies, and when it gets too hot on the planet, that is the sign that the sun is dying and it's going to happen at the year 2000, or 2015. And we know that that's not going to happen because the calculations actually have already been given in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Whereas we're still in the modern civilized world, scientific schools, we're still trying to figure out from where the earth has come from, how long human beings have been here, etc., etc. So Srimad Bhagavatam in this section, it is very specific. It is giving us not only calculations of the second, how the second has been measured, or the days, months, or years, but also the cycles, the Yuga cycles, the how long the Kali Yuga cycle is, the Satya Treta Dwapara Yuga. All these things have actually been given, and calculations have been given for that, so that there is no room or error for speculation. This is a scientific, actually this is a scientific report about what happens when the time factor acts upon the different atomic particles, acts on matter, what happens with the planetary systems, with the universes, with the living entities. So we know that when the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is lying in his yoga nidra, of course he's breathing in and out, and this is not in the same manner, of course, as we are lying down in our sleep. When we lie down in our sleep, of course, we're extremely hit by the mode of ignorance. Whereas Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, of course, his yoga nidra is a very transcendental one in which he's breathing in and out and the universes are emanating from his pores, and of course they're being retracted back until the best time for the creation should happen once again. So it is explained that when Lord Brahma goes to sleep in his night time, the three planetary systems below Brahmaloka, they are all submerged in the waters, in the sweat of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And in the sleeping condition, it's said that Lord Brahma actually goes to sleep. Lord Brahma dreams about Garbhodakshaya Vishnu and takes instruction from the Lord for the rehabilitation of the devastated area of space. So when he rises again, the living entities are once again put back into the different universes along with their fruitive desires, their karma and the time factor, so that they can continue with their activities. So like this, there are actions that are set in motion when it comes to annihilation, destruction, maintenance. It is not all happening by chance, nor is it happening randomly. It is all being it's all under the vigilant eye of the Lord, because ultimately everything is being sanctioned by Krishna. We understand that Krishna is the primary creator, and that Lord Brahma, being the most intelligent being in the universe, he is given the task of secondary creation. So everything is actually being provided by the Lord. The systems have been put into place, and Lord Brahma, from his austerities, he has been given the intelligence, the Buddha Yoga, to carry out his devotional service for the Supreme Lord. So the other, it's a very short purport, but within it there's so many things to say. It's also explaining the atom. Prabhupada says, in modern science also, the atom is accepted as the ultimate indivisible particle of which the universe is composed. Srimad Bhagavatam is a full text of all descriptions of knowledge, including the theory of atomism. The atom is the minute subtle form of eternal time. So the full picture, or the full spectrum here, in terms of the basis of the atom and the time factor and how they correlate with one another, are being clearly given here. What generally happens in the modern science is that the atom is not being correlated with its cause, or it is not being correlated with its subsequent actions. So it is not being correlated with eternal time. Therefore, it is very, very difficult to scientifically for people to try and understand, yes, the material universe is comprised of the atomic particles, etc. But behind all of that, of course, the workings, the subtle and the gross aspects of all these elements are coming from the Supreme Lord Himself. So the Bhagavatam is giving a full picture, not just a rough estimate, but a full picture of the atomic particle and how the living entity, although we're reading all of this now, we do not get sidetracked into thinking the world is nothing but matter and particles. That there's matter, that life comes from matter. Because if one just reads this section understanding that the universe and everything else is just a combination of atoms, double atoms, triple atoms, etc. And that's how everything has come into being. So we can very easily run with this idea. Yes, Bhagavatam is saying that there's atoms, and from one atom there's double atoms, sub-atoms, etc. And then there was living entities. But we have to understand that this is just one, as Chaitanya Charanprabhu was explaining the other day, one way of explaining, but it is not the ultimate explanation. That yes, there is the atom, there is time, but they are in correlation with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Supreme Kala itself, it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So by understanding the connection, the relationship, we do not fall into the misunderstanding that life comes from matter. Or that even just within our own small or in our own body, that we're nothing but atoms, protons and neurons just running around our body. That the source of our everything, the source of our being, of course, is the Supreme Lord who manifests different energies. He has His inferior and superior energies. And understanding just the inferior energy will not give us a full depiction of who we are, who our Creator is, and what His energies are and how they function. So we cannot actually separate creation from Krishna, because creation requires a creator, it requires an energy, it requires a personality behind it to set everything in motion. Just as everything that's being created by an individual comes from the individual, a person has created a microphone, a person has created this table, a person has created this building using the combination of different elements. Similarly, even the universal cosmos, the universal egg, has been given value, has been given life by the presence of the super soul entering within the universe and entering within the hearts of all the living entities, directing all the wanderings as if seated on a machine. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining that also, that life is actually coming from life, that the conditioned soul is identifying with matter, covering the real identity, covering the potency of acquiring that understanding. So when that happens, of course, we are ignorant to who we really are, parts of the complete whole. So we're part and parcel of Krishna. We're not just elements or parts flicking around, dead bodies flapping, but we are actually spirit, we're non-material spiritual entities encaged within a material gross body which is made up of inferior energy. So when one gets to understand that on a small scale, then we can get to understand the universal body as well. That yes, it has all these atoms in their most minute form. They have the time factor which is acting on the universe depending on the different space and time factor, and producing different form, different lengths of life, different ways of calculating time based on the space that time is covering. That is why we have different durations of life on different planets. That is why we have different types of entities on different planets. So that will be explained later on in these texts. if I'm not mistaken. The material body is but a combination of such atoms, but it is misunderstood by the common man. Now this misunderstanding is it's something that we can also relate to. The first instruction that we get in Bhagavad Gita is that we're not the body, that we're spirit soul. But because we have taken repeated birth and death so many times, we see the body, which is a combination of these material elements, atoms, etc. We think that this material body is the ultimate body, and therefore we misunderstand what our identity actually is. Is it matter or is it spirit? Sometimes we just think we might think we're spiritual beings having a material experience, or actually material beings living in the material world, and that's all that there ever will be, and that's all that there ever is. But this is a misunderstanding, it's a misconception of the identity. As Prabhupada would often say, we have forgotten who we are, we have forgotten that we are part and parcel of Krishna. And scientific knowledge these days is very, very powerful. It is widely taught, especially in schools. We all get taught from a very young age about the Big Bang Theory, and it is drilled into our head. We are taught so often that our body is made up of different chemicals, and there is no such thing as the spiritual particle. So when we're growing up, this is how, at least some of us, this is how we were taught in school, that everything is very scientific, and we all emerge just from a huge bang, and this is how human beings ended up being here. Having said that, of course, we go through life with the same understanding, and therefore our behavior is very much drilled or associated with the misconception of who we are, the misconception that our real identity is the external body that we are actually seeing. Not being able to pierce through or to look beyond the gross covering and the subtle covering. So there's different philosophies that have been put out there, and the purpose, of course, of having to hear these descriptions, these explanations Srila Prabhupada has given, is so that we can unlearn the, how do you say without sounding rude, we have to unlearn the negative, or we have to get rid of the negative impressions that have been instilled in us from time immemorial, pretty much, identifying with the body. So sometimes it's a huge task to actually get rid of our misconceptions and our speculations. The idea or the notion that we are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord is very intimidating sometimes, because that requires relationship, that requires personalism. And part of the reason why I used to think to myself, yeah, I'm just matter. There's no further substance to me after I die. Therefore, I will live life however I want to live it. No rules, no regulations, nothing based on an authority. Right? No God, no nothing. Therefore, I live a destructive life because I believe that I am matter. So it is very difficult to actually convince people that you are a servant, you're part and parcel of Krishna. We get used to the idea of impersonal interactions. We get used to a cold reception, therefore we're cold towards others. Therefore we do not We're not sensitive to other people. We do not think about others. We become very selfish and self-centered because it's all about my enjoyment right now, what the body can do to me or for me, and how I can get pleasure from my current body, because bodily pleasure and stimulation and sensation is the topmost thing, because this is who I am. And anything that comes in between my sensual experiences is my enemy. And anything that hampers my sensory experiences is my enemy. Whether it be family, friend, they are enemies. So this is how deeply scarred we are about having, you know, the understanding that there is an authority and that we are servants. Even just using the word servant for some people is painful. But servant in spiritual culture, of course, we understand Lord Chaitanya himself said he's the servant of the servant of the servant. So in our philosophy, being a servant is topmost, because even Lord Chaitanya himself decided to appear as a servant of the Lord. So if God himself comes to say, listen, I'm in the role of a servant and I'm tasting the most intense bliss and happiness. What you speak of us tiny jivas, we are so anu, we are so small. There's so many of us, yet we think it is not possible. Being a servant is a low status. Because we think in terms of material conceptions and ideas, because that's how the material world is. That's how it is grooming us to think materially. Therefore, being a servant means low class, means you're not intelligent, you have no qualification, and you're being you're a subject, and your master torments you, and etc. etc. All negative things. But actually, when you come under the umbrella of Krishna, it is actually once we get to actually experience what it's like to be a servant of Krishna, it is very relishable. It is very tasteful. It actually gives the spirit soul eternal happiness and bliss. And it has said, you know, we are eternally parts and parcels of Krishna. That is our eternal constitution. That can never change. Whether we choose to admit it or not, that fact won't change. Just as the fact that we are spiritual entities will never change. We could try to forge, or we can try to manipulate who we are. We can try to stay in this material body as long as we can. And yes, that is being tried. I was reading one article the other day, I think it was in Time magazine, how we're trying to play God, we're trying to control nature, we're trying to recreate so many things. So we're trying to change our bodies, we're trying to keep them as youthful as they can. Right? Because we're trying to hang on to this material body because we think it is who we are. And as soon as it starts changing, there's fear. Because material existence means fear. Material existence means beginning. I was reading yesterday. Beginning, middle, and end. So everything will be created, maintained, and then everything will just go away. It will vanish. So the nature of things in the material world, when we get attached, whether it's to a body or an idea or a paradigm, etc., it has its phase, it will be there for some time, and then it will disappear. So as soon as we see any slight change in the body, there's a lot of fear that comes within our heart and within our mind, because we do not know what comes next. If I don't have this body, then what is coming? What is next? So we try to claim the material body as the self. But that is not possible, because the material body will die. Sorry. The material body will end at a certain point, And when the material body does end, all the elements will, from the gross to the subtle, all the elements will merge back into the totality, and this living entity will be released. Depending on our karma, we go to different destinations. So trying to claim the material body as the self is the biggest misunderstanding. And that is what will make it difficult for the conditioned soul to try to make spiritual advancement. So long as we're still on the bodily identification, gross or subtle, it won't be easy for us to break out of the cycle of repeated birth and death. Therefore, when we hear the correct description of how even just from the smallest body right up to the universal body, yes, there are material elements, they are being created, they are being conglomerated, and they are being affected on by time and the three modes of material nature, etc. But at the same time, they only have value, they only have worth because of the presence of the Supersoul and the Jiva. Therefore, the Jiva is superior by nature, because we are coming from Krishna. But when we get tainted by matter, our superiority becomes complexed. Then we cannot see our real identity. Then we behave in a way that is not befitting of a pure spirit soul. So we become trapped in the snares of Maya. But by reading, by hearing even the scientific explanation of calculation of time from the atom, or just the creation process, the destruction process, etc. As Vidura and Maitreya, they're having this conversation over in previous chapters. And now we will start hearing Maitreya speaking, speaking about how the living entity, when he gets attracted to hearing these subject matters, his consciousness becomes elevated and he becomes the greatest mystic. He doesn't necessarily have to seek out the mystic perfections, but just by understanding these particular subject matters, the living entity becomes Trikalagya. He becomes a knower of the past, present and the future, because we can understand what is happening. It is cyclic. Yes, there is creation, maintenance and destruction, whereas the living entity can be released from all of that. So these processes are going on perpetually, eternally. Even the material elements are eternal because they're being produced. They are Krishna's inferior energy. But we have to understand them properly without separating Krishna from creation. Because Krishna is behind the creation process and he empowers Lord Brahma. So it is best for us to hear this conversation further between Maitreya and Vidura and properly understand how to avoid this misconception that we are the material body. Just by understanding these subject matters, we can understand that we, the living entities, are different from matter. We are spiritual by nature. And these subject matters can purify our consciousness and elevate our consciousness in such a way that we're able to make that distinction without being bothered by material identities. So I will stop here and I will ask for some comments or corrections. And I pray for any forgiveness on anything I have said. If it has been wrong, please feel free to correct me. If anyone's listening at home, you can send me a text message. Please correct me. It is a difficult subject matter to speak on, having 5 minutes to prepare. Okay, the floor is open. Yeah.
So we can often hear how people try to compare the scientific notions with the information from Srimad Bhagavatam. So and even in this chapter, the information is given about atoms. So, what is the to which extent can we actually compare the science and the descriptions in Bhagavatam, and is it such comparison, is it applicable to Bhagavatam, or we shouldn't actually make a comparison between the science and the information in Bhagavatam?
Okay. To what degree can we relate what we're hearing from Bhagavatam to modern science? How safe is it for us to compare the truth given in modern science and what we're reading here?
Yeah, or if we can't compare, then what's the proper understanding of the information given in Bhagavatam? So like this text is saying that the indivisible, but according to the science, you know, there are like subatomic particles and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a nice question. If you keep reading this chapter, from text 14 onwards, there's a purport, text 14 purport, Prabhupada explains that the subject matters of physics, chemistry, mathematics, astronomy, time and space dealt with in the above verse of Srimad Bhagavatam are certainly very interesting to students of the particular subject. So if you have a thirst, or if you're attractive, if you like to read more, you can read this canto, this certain section. And as you're saying, how modern science has told us about subatomic particles, etc., atoms, there's an explanation in the same purport. Prabhupada is also, according to the Vedic text, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, he's given the correlation in terms of seconds, minutes, hours, days, etc., which we can understand. Also, science has given us those explanations, but we also have that understanding here. And Prabhupada, in the purport for today, he says that the atom is a minute, subtle form of eternal time. Now, in order for us to be able to actually compare, or even just try to, if we come across some modern science that tries to explain these subject matters, we have to be well educated in what Bhagavatam says, and then we'll be able to actually delineate and find out what exactly is correct and what is not correct. But if we don't know what Bhagavatam actually says about time or atoms, then it will be difficult for us to even try to see any type of similarity or etc. So my suggestion would be to read up on certain sections and then try to understand. And then if you do come across any scientific information, we can correlate and actually see, is it similar? Prabhu the other day was saying, sometimes modern science can just give a basic understanding. Oh, okay, the atom, it is this type of energy, etc. But in the Bhagavatam, you'll find quite a lot of details. Lots of detail will be given, especially in terms of astronomy, in terms of, duration of life, in terms of the different yugas, duration of the planets, etc. That's been given in not even approximately, but the actual numbers, the actual years or the actual time has been given in Bhagavatam. So if we read on the creation process, if we study those pages, if we come across anything else, we'll be able to understand maybe where the flaw is or maybe where the lack of these specific events is. So my advice would be read up, make sure you're well versed in this subject matter. But Prabhupada opens up this purport by saying in modern science also the atom is accepted as the ultimate indivisible particle of which the universe is composed. So Prabhupada is saying that from the beginning, yes, at anatomism, it is also there. It also explains in the same way Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining that, but in depth, actually. It goes deeper into it. But in modern science, it says the same thing. The atom is accepted as the ultimate indivisible particle of which the universe is composed. That is correct. But how exactly, from where it comes, from where it ends, etc., that modern science does not explain. That can be given in Bhagavatam. If you're not satisfied, tomorrow Devamita Swami is giving class, so maybe you can ask him. And Chaitanya Swami Prabhu is still here, so there's better people you can ask. That was just my neophyte answer.
Well, that's so much. I'm just thinking, you know, when we talk here about and the invisible part, the scientists maybe haven't even time to that part yet, because they're very limited, and because they knew about only the atom, maybe they were saying, well, that is invisible, and which proof not. That doesn't mean that we get that we can compare that invisible part from Srimad Bhagavatam with atom. If they studied, they developed, they can at all develop new scientific tools to find about that indivisible part, that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It's written in Srimad Bhagavatam, it exists, but it's not the atom. Maybe we knew about the atom, which it is divisible. The atom is divisible because it's has proton, neutrons, and all sorts of things. They haven't come yet to that indivisible part.
Okay, I was just reading word for word what Prabhupada is saying. Maybe I'll read it again. In modern science also, the atom is accepted as the ultimate indivisible particle of which the universe is composed. So they're just looking from that angle. The smallest thing scientists can say, okay, the smallest unit we can try to calculate or contain whatever is making up matter, etc., is an atom. This is what I understand from this line.
I understand that at that time the sun was named atom as invisible, and Prabhupada accepted it as that same as from this one. But now we know that atom is divisible. So it's not that Prabhupada is not right, that's not even what the science that had offered it. That's not the way I see it. That's the science he said, okay, this is the smallest invisible part.
Sure, someone else can comment further, but it is not the same. How do I say this? Prabhupada says it is almost the same as the modern science. He says the atomic description of the Srimad Bhagavatam is almost the same. So although yes, they might be saying in modern science it is acceptable to see an atom as the ultimate indivisible part which the universe is composed of. However, there is a difference in their own understanding. Because Prabhupada also says it's almost the same. It's not completely the same, but it is almost the same as to what the modern science is saying atomism is. So there are differences. As I say, it might be a general understanding. Okay, it's the smallest unit we can give towards a particle that we find in matter. However, there are some differences because Bhagavatam goes further to explain all of these things as it is given in the later purports from text 14 onwards. There's more description. Any other comment or question? Yeah, that's the problem of modern science, because their definitions are always changing. Right, even from 1 year, 5 years down the line, they'll come up with a new definition for intelligent design or the particle. It's a theory is always being disproved in science. So one theorist will say, well, the theory of relativity is this. It's not this. And another scientist will come and say, well, actually, the theory of relativism, it is not this, it is this. Then another one will come and say, and within 5 years, you have so much of trying to explain one thing. So even the definition, in terms of modern understanding, because there is no basis, there is no firm foundation, we at least have Bhagavatam, which is an eternal Shastra. It is not changing every year. Oh, hang on, let's edit the Bhagavatam, because we actually think that there's about 4.9 million different species of life now. So that's not how we come to our conclusions. Our conclusions have been given already by the Acharyas, as Srila Vyasadeva wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam. So these are conclusive truths that we don't have to change. This is Shastra as it is. Whereas with science, these are limited conditioned souls trying to explain vast understanding. So the limited jiva trying to explain the unlimited, even if it's in relation to his material expansion. Only if you are given special mercy is the limited able to explain the unlimited. So in order for us to actually understand, whether as a scientist or just as a common man, to understand these subject matters, particularly Krishna's creation and how he is neutral to it, it requires Krishna's mercy. But to give a detailed description of trying to understand the cosmos without understanding Krishna, you can't get that far. You can't be that conclusive. Because Krishna, we won't be able to understand with our limited intelligence. It's not possible. Oh, we're not? We're not clear?
Yeah, like, you know, really specifically, because she's saying it's like it's not divisible. You know, the nuclear energy is splitting the atom. So just that term is that. I think it comes later with
why has Bhagavatam?
Bhagavatam contains such technical chapters, because obviously it is not about atom physics or anything like that. I mean, before Bhagavatam.
It's meant to give us pure love of God.
Yes, so is it like, what's the intention of including this information into the Bhagavatam?
The intention is that it is actually, we see nowadays that it is actually very much necessary to explain these subject matters, especially when we're preaching, right? It is necessary from that viewpoint, because there are persons who want to know, according to our philosophy, how is the universe structured? What are particles? What is an atom? From your guys' philosophy, how do you explain it? Therefore, it is actually necessary. And every bona fide Shastra has to have 10 subject matters in which creation is one of them. So this has to be explained. For the individual, for us, it is good to understand how Krishna is actually all-pervasive as the supreme controller, maintainer, creator. And later on, when we hear about his pastimes, we don't get familiar because we understand his majesty and the ability to do all of this. So the intricacies or the detail, it is for our purification. Some of us will understand it really well, some of us maybe, some of us not so much, but it is part of our growth to actually try to grasp how Krishna's energy are working, including the time factor, including, you know, if you look at it really, if we go into other scriptures, there's even much more description that has been given. As Prabhupada says here, it's further described in the Paramanuvad of Kannada. I don't even know what that is. It's some shastra. So it is even more, it's even described in detail in that section. And what we're getting here is enough to get us to understand, okay, this is how Krishna is entering even the most tiniest particle, or this is how Krishna is maintaining the universal cosmos. This is how his energy is working. And when we understand all these things, gradually we understand not only the rasas with Krishna, but also Krishna's tattva. Krishna being the Supreme Personality of God. What does that mean? Okay, unlimited pastimes, okay, six opulences, but it also means that he's the creator of everything. Everything is resting on him, including his subtle form of time. That is Krishna. So we get to understand that, we appreciate Krishna more, and we don't really get too familiar, because the general thing that happens, at least more so in India, when you think of Srimad Bhagavatam, most people think of Rasalila immediately. Am I correct or am I wrong? Is it more attractive when you're in Bhagavat Saptahas? Krishna Lila, right? Don't even, you know, dynasties and creations and etc. It is, people do not focus on that aspect, but they go to other aspects, and that is not the proper way of doing things. This is also part of Krishna's personality, the manager, in terms of his universal doings. So for us, it is good to read and get purified, to understand Krishna's majesty as the creator, before we get to his personal aspect, so that we don't get overly familiar. So it is, shastrically, we have to have a certain section that deals with creation. Yes, Prabhu?
Yes, I think about the earlier point. Even though we try to compare science and the chapter about our children in this section, the reality is that we tell that, okay, the atom can be subdivided into several particles that are anti-dismissible. But the reality is that we are conditioned by the modern education. That's the way of speaking like this. Hmm. Say, for example, nobody has seen electrons. It is just that electrons, protons, and neutrons are mathematical constructs to explain
what the atom is.
Yeah. So no one really knows. So if you really want to compare, then we need to thoroughly understand the problems in the modern science and how things are unclear.
Hmm. Like, even the definitions are saying that gradually, over time, they keep changing because there's no clear cut basis.
If they say we need to really compare, okay, we could to some degree fit it apart, but we need to really understand the problems in the science if you want to compare it with. Mm. But we don't know. We are all speaking based on our textbook education, you know, which we had maybe many years back, and we are just carrying forward and we are just trying to compare. So it doesn't make a lot of sense. So if we really want to compare, understand Bhagavatam thoroughly and understand the modern science with its problems and see whether there's any possibility of comparing. Okay. Yeah, even if we can't compare, there's nothing wrong.
Yeah.
As Jeremy was mentioning before, there are two different worldviews.
Yep.
Nothing wrong if we can't compare.
Yeah, because like a scientific method, it is based on the sensual perception, which is like verifiable by every human being. That means everyone can verify it with their own senses. And
really?
No.
Yeah. Well, no. There are like let's put aside the radio waves or something like that, but there are like much simpler things.
For example?
Yeah, like for example, in the ninth text, it is said that they used to measure. But, you know, from science we know that the gold is actually a softer than the copper. So, what's the point of drilling? It's like you're trying to drill a harder material with a softer, you know, ball. So it doesn't make sense. So then, I mean, it is very easy to easy and verifiable because, you know, some materials are softer and some harder. So that means there must be some other secret which wasn't mentioned in the shoulder.
Yeah, but how far are we clear about the methodology that is used for? We don't know the methodology that's being used.
Yeah, so that's why I'm asking, what's the point of including such a technical chapter? The point is to test our faith, or because sometimes we can't really kind of experience. I mean,
yeah, even sometimes in the material world, we don't get what they're saying to us, but we go on faith. We have to have faith to believe that in order to be a human being, you have to have 2.5 million in a house, you have to look like this, walk like this, have this job. We have to have faith to do certain things also in the material world. So our faith in Krishna consciousness, although, you know, when I first read Bhagavatam, I heard about flying elephants and people fighting on rats and, you know, things that were just so far. I mean, really, I hadn't even seen this in a movie. Flying elephants. And, you know, people who would be transformed into rivers. So for me, it was totally, wow, this is sci-fi. It's like a sci-fi movie. So I had some faith in Krishna to just keep reading and understanding. There are things that are beyond me. I cannot say I don't believe it because I haven't seen it, or it sounds, you know, copper, gold. It sounds a bit weird. This is just a limited perception. And as it says in that purport, Prabhupada was giving it as an example that there were many ways that people would measure time, including putting, he gives this one of the sand. He said, just as time is measured by sand in a glass, that's another way. Time is also measured with the sun on the earth. Different civilizations had their different ways of measuring time. So Prabhupada here is just merely giving different examples that could have been used. So this chapter is not to taunt us and like drill us and like, you know, give us a hard time, but we're just meant to be humbled and see that there's a lot that goes on that our mind can't actually grasp. But it doesn't mean that we should deny the fact that this can happen, or the fact that based on this, a conclusion of time has been made.
So that means this information is included with the purpose of making us humble.
There are many reasons. Many, many reasons.
Because, or is it like it is kind of a defense mechanism so that people who are not humble, they won't be able to proceed and get to the spiritual knowledge?
Not really. No.
Because, yeah, so it will filter out those who can't actually.
No, not really. I mean, I don't understand half the things here. I still continue reading. But it doesn't mean because I don't understand the chapter called Calculation of Time from the Atom, I'm disbarred from trying to attain Krishna.
Yeah, because like we are trying to preach to people.
Yeah, and some people like hearing this.
Yeah, but some people, they will say, okay, it's like gold is soft. Gold is softer than copper. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make sense, so I would reject the whole Bible.
Well, then that's the misfortune. How can you judge one thing? How can you judge an entire philosophy based on one thing you don't understand? That's just, it's not smart. Just one little needle in a haystack is going to make you hate hay. Then that's not intelligent. But that normally happens. People will whitewash an entire book because they have agreed with one thing, just because they cannot grasp it.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
Yeah.
So you can try to give them another example.
Yeah, that's why I'm trying to understand why this information was provided, because it doesn't make our life easier. Because, you know, the ordinary people will approach us and ask, oh, how you can believe, you know, this and that, like the moon is further than the sun and stuff like that.
Yeah, so, many people have been... have believed that in the past, many people will accept it in the future. As you can see, there's many people who appreciate Bhagavatam. So some people will, some people won't. But it is not—it's not hindering our preaching. I don't think.
His point is just like Krishna says, "Nanam Prakasha Sarvajna," that Krishna is not manifest to everyone. So there's some things, information in Bhagavatam that will just turn away people like that.
As I'm saying, some people will accept it, some people won't, and it'll always be like that. I don't think, from my knowledge, it's my understanding is not that the jnana section or something like this is put in the Bhagavatam to ward off unfaithful people. If you get to the third canto, if you've read to the third canto, there's a certain amount of faith you have to have read that far. That means, you know, you would have read the basics, Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll end here. Thank you very much. Congratulations, Bhagavatam. Thank you, Jack. Jesus.